Ladies and gentlemen, I've been writing about the literacy crisis in this country for 20 years. It's very frustrating because for me, the educational malpractice is obvious. You can't teach children to read by making them memorize sight words one at a time for many, many years. It just does not work. Today, I'm going to introduce you to three reformers focused on reading. These are very serious people and very benevolent. That's what you won't find in our education establishment. My impression is that these people are playing games and they are malevolent. Now here's the background of the story. Starting in 1931, the education establishment, which basically means PhD professors, unleashed look-say upon the children of the United States. The result was a rising tide of illiteracy. The number of functional illiterates now exceeds 40 million, or possibly 50 million. The so-called educators who engineered this decline have shown a demonic cleverness in attacking the common sense of phonics while piling up silly sophistries that supposedly justify the hoax of hold word or sight words. It is against this backdrop that Denise Ide, E-I-D-E, wrote her book, Uncovering the Logic of English. Ide, our first expert, quantifies our unnecessary crisis. Open quote. The statistics are both numbing and consistent. A third of fourth graders read well, a third test below proficiency, and a third cannot read at all. Every time I meet an elementary school teacher, I ask if this reflects their experience. They all say it does. Ide is confident, open quote, that we can teach reading at a fraction of the cost and with much higher success rates than we currently do. To do so, it is essential that all students, all teachers, and all parents know the logic of English. The knowledge in her book is as basic to academic success as 1 + 1 = 2. The second expert is Nora Shabazi, who created an approach 20 years ago called Evidence-Based Literacy Instruction, or EBLI. She was inspired by the painful experiences her daughter had in second grade. The daughter wasn't learning to read, but the teacher seemed to think that was just fine. The third reformer has made a big impact in the last several years. This is Emily Hanford. She had an article in the New York Times about the science of reading. That's a good place to start for an introduction to the modern malaise. I'm sure the three crusaders have small differences of opinion, but they're all promoting phonics. They work with teachers a lot, so they're very understanding of the typical problems. Pick one of them if you have to roll dice, and let her be your guide out of the swamp. Anything is better than staying in the ordinary environment created in our public schools where all the theories are bad theories. Now, personally, I believe many people do learn to read with sight words, but only in the sense that they use them as a stepping stone, so that finally, several years later than it should happen, they see the phonics inside the sight words. But probably not even one person in 100, or much more, 200 or 300, has such a retentive memory that they can actually memorize many thousands of sight words and recall them instantly. In short, virtually all the success that sight words experts claim is really an illusion, a fraud. I would argue that sight words are not only useless but destructive to the brain and should not be considered an option. Here is the true choice if you want to choose between two things. Intensive phonics, as outlined in Ide's book or in any of these other programs, or you might have a more literary approach that simply emphasizes certain nursery rhymes, singing, sharing stories, and a sort of total immersion in language and reading. Many people learn to read almost spontaneously, just as musical people sing or play piano with little instruction. I published almost 1 million words without knowing a single phonics rule. As I've learned in dozens of anecdotes, the more verbal kids figure it out. Remember that first graders show up at school already recognizing way over 20,000 words, and they speak English words all day long. The leap to reading those words off the page is not so great as the education establishment likes to pretend when concocting excuses for its own dismal failure. The interesting paradox here is that the slower, less verbal kids, the very ones you think would have the most trouble learning the phonics rules, are precisely those children who most desperately need the phonics rules. The whole word charlatans always use the slower students as their alibi. Oh, we would not want to abuse these poor darlings with low verbal skills, would we? How could they possibly memorize 100 phonics rules? So the answer turns out to be that those children must be made to memorize 10,000 English words as diagrams. But so these slower children, around whom the entire scam has been constructed, never advance very far in the program. They become functional illiterates. Hold word in operation functions as a Ponzi scheme. The child learns to read a few hundred words and is soon able to read small books with controlled vocabularies. They're just reading them from memory, you see. The apparent success keeps the parents quiet and out of the way. Here's why I say hold word is a Ponzi scheme. The early success is actually a lie and is paid for many times in the years ahead, many years of failure. Trying to learn new words finally blocks the words you thought were successfully learned. Meanwhile, the phonics kids who start slow and shaky end up reading at extraordinary speeds in a year or two. Joan Dunn, a teacher, wrote in 1954 what I now believe to be the most profound truth about education. This is a quote now. The children want to be taught step by step so that they can see their progress. The duller they are, the more important and immediate is this need. That is the most profound, because you understand what should happen first and most importantly. Last paragraph. The kids are begging to be taught correctly. When you won't teach them the essential facts they need to know, they are miserable and unsuccessful. And I say that it is the job of every school teacher to rescue the children of America from this kind of abuse. Thank you. Overview. Let's Fix Education explores 7 of my favorite themes. First, this podcast is a meditation on what I call the K-12 crime scene. So many destructive ideas. Understanding them is the key to fixing them. 2. By doing that, we will have better schools at less cost. 3. Nothing much changes decade to decade. The big questions of the 1930s were the big questions of the 1960s and the 1990s. Any subject we discuss can easily intersect with any other subject. Most people instinctively want traditional education. But the education establishment fills classrooms with progressive gimmicks. The result is that we have a standoff, and that's why you run into the same ideas over and over. 4. The big brains in education keep telling students, don't bother memorizing this or that. You can look it up later. B.B. King, the great guitarist, is much smarter. He said, the beautiful thing about learning is nobody can take it away from you. 5. Lenin's ghost wanders through our school system. The hard left thinks big. If they have to kill millions of people to build their perfect society, that's okay. Same goes for dumbing down millions of students. Totalitarians want power. They will do anything to get it. 6. If we are going to survive, we have to take each child to his or her limit. As it is, we are creating millions of sub-educated students, from K right through college. 7. Analyzing education, especially dysfunctional education, is a lot more intellectually interesting than most people suppose. You'll enjoy this. Finally, P.S. My book, Saving K-12, runs parallel to everything discussed on this podcast. I also have an education site, improve-education.com education.org with 70 articles that complement everything discussed here. And I have hundreds of articles on the internet. Enter a topic in Google with my full name, Bruce Dietrich Price, and let Google make suggestions. Thank you for visiting.